Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Hello and welcome to, or welcome back to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and as always, it is a pleasure to be with you, to bring you those wonderful sparks that may be the positive solution, positive change in your life. So in this wonderful season of transitions and learning opportunities and meant to cover my book. So how has your last week been? As you have focused on the process in the progress, as well as the progress in the process, either way works. And knowing that moving forward is important and celebrating the baby steps. So I'm very excited because I'm about to ink a date with Linda Galindo for December 21st, which is my husband's birthday. So Linda will be joining me. Linda is the creator of Accountability That Works, the Accountability Experience from Pfeiffer, and the book, The 85%.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with
what
strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your
away.
Life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, that's weird because I'm not seeing any. That is so odd. This isn't playing. Oh, wow. That's freaky because I just looked at it. It wasn't running. So when I clicked it, it started again. All right. Ooh, gremlins in the system. So if you listened last week and looked at your languaging around your progress as we're cruising to year end and getting ready to take action on opportunities. Before I was distracted by the show intro starting to play again, you were talking about Linda Galindo joining me for my program on December 21st. That's what we're scheduling. Talk about the power of accountability. And so I know for the programs that I've done on accountability, the clients that have had, it's a great opportunity to talk with her. So excited for that. So this week, we're going to spend some time in some strategies, some solutions around having your best brain. I had an opportunity last week. I'm excited to bring you Tana Gertz. Tana was a finalist in season 3 of The Apprentice. She lives here in Iowa. I didn't know that. Her website is Hey Tana, and she's the author of a children's book, in addition to being the bedazzling queen. And I spoke with Tana after the YP symposium last week, and she will be coming to join me in an interview to talk about her life experience and how she became an author and her mission with kids and with her work with her children's book. So I'm hoping we get that date inked before year end as well, so we can learn from her experience. So back to the brain. Seeing odd things happening on my computer screen. Visually distracting, so I apologize for jumping around here. We're trying to make sure everything's going where it's supposed to at this point. So I also, last week, how I connected to the story with Tana, is met some wonderful young professionals in the Dubuque, Iowa area, and spoke with a father during the networking session after the day, talking about the, how to provide the tools and information for parents, particularly about the brain, because, you know, the kids don't pop out with a manual, and you can get the owner's manual for the brain by Pierce J. Howard, subtitled Everyday Applications for Mind-Brain Research. And it is probably, I don't know, 4 inches thick maybe or so. And then my son Allison said, well, Mom, there's a ruler right there. Okay. It's maybe 2 1/4 inches thick. I do. Yeah, better to measure. And so as this father and I were talking about his 4-year-old and his 18-month-old, I believe, and talking about how children's brains are not just little adult brains. They are developmentally different, structurally different. Gender makes a difference. He has a daughter and a son. And reinforced for me, one of my passions and missions is to provide those resources to parents so that they can have an even more powerful experience with raising their children, have some more confidence in themselves. And so today, I would take a little bit of time and share some information about the brain, some things that actions that you could take as a parent if you've got kids or even for your own brain. My regular listeners will know I love to read and stay up to date with research, and then translate that into practical things, practical actions that people can take, or books that they can read. Brain Rules is one of my favorite relatively current books by Dr. John Medina. You can go to brainrules.net to see video clips and tutorials about the brain. There are gender differences with the brain, and I have a son. And so one of the things that it reminded me is to take, go back in and do some looking about gender differences and structural differences that happen. So I've just begun taking a look back into that. In the meantime, it's very important, I think, for parents to realize that we all have those moments where we get frustrated and that we find ourselves emotionally hijacked when we're dealing with our kids because we wish they would react like adults, that they would just do what we say and they would understand consequences of their actions, and they're not like that. They are living in the moment. Especially if they're younger. Their whole life is a big learning experiment, and it's about joy and fun, truly. It was one of my father's favorite things. Do you think life's just about having fun, playing, and that's all there is to it? Well, when you're a kid, yeah. Especially when you're a younger child. And as you grow and you have more responsibility and you learn about being a positive contributor to the family and to society, that's all part of developing. And the part of the brain that reasons, there's a bridge between the emotional area of the brain and the reasoning area of the brain, and that doesn't mature until at least about 18 years old or so. And so we wonder why the decisions that adolescents and our kids make seem so emotional and so impulsive. And, you know, my father's favorite question of what were you thinking? I don't know. Well, we didn't know because we weren't thinking. We were in the moment. We were enjoying. We were playing. So teaching how to make those choices around how to make those choices to pause and think of consequences after I decided with that. And one of the gender differences that most people have heard of is that boys, males, tend to be better spatially, with spatial orientation. Women tend to be more skilled with verbal fluency and use of words. They can put words to emotions. Whereas men experience emotions, they just don't always have the words to put with the feelings. And that's connected to the thickness of a structure in the brain called the corpus callosum. And that's a thick band of nerves that connect the right and left sides of the brain. And in women, that's thicker. And so it's thought to have something to do with the fact that women can not only feel the emotions processed in one side of the brain, the language that's connected to it in the other as well, because they communicate. The two hemispheres communicate very well because of the thickness of that structure called the corpus callosum. So if you want to learn more, especially to understand the brain of the opposite gender, and there was a piece of research done by Diane Halpern in 2000 that talked about her research reviewed that in general, the majority of evidence tends to support the idea that females are more verbally precocious than males. In other words, they start talking sooner. But the effects are small and probably of little practical significance. She also goes on to say math differences are not universal between men and women. In China, women make up a large portion of the professional engineers and scientists. So there are some real trait and ability differences. They're small. The stereotype perceptions are strong. So thinking about how you as a parent communicate your expectations and try to break down stereotypes. And so there may be, that may be true for more of the cognitive differences, spatial ability, et cetera. But yes, it's interesting to take a look at what we are now discovering about the differences between males and females in a number of areas. There is a something related to gender difference with taste that many people have not thought about or aren't aware of, and that female differentiated brains are more sensitive to sweets, males to salty taste. So that means that, you know, an average woman would require more salt and then more sugar. And the author talks about the example of his wife tendency to oversalt food when she cooks, and he oversweetens hot chocolate when he makes it from scratch. So there still is more research, of course, to do. And with everything, you know, in looking at multiple studies to be an intelligent consumer of information. And, you know, what is normal for brains versus what might be abnormal, what would be worth pursuing as an area of concern. I'm looking at the brain as a learning organ. What can we do to help people learn more effectively, remember for it more effectively, and with kids, just keep that excitement and joy around learning, which can be lost with the grill and drill, or drill and grill, of homework. There is absolutely value in practice. However, when it becomes drudgery or overwhelming, children are struggling, then it may have a different effect, an opposite effect. And there is a section in the Owner's Manual for the Brain on learning, looking at facilitating learning, enhancing memory. And again, most parents will support learning the way they learned, or if they weren't good at learning, they'll cut kids some slack. Yeah, well, I wasn't good at math either. Really? And it's important to help developing brains. And one of the things, too, to keep in mind has to do with those brain breaks that our brains need when we're putting in new information. And there's a period after you put in new information where those new neural connections that are formed in the brain need time to connect, to strengthen. And so there needs to be a brief period after that where you don't give it new stuff to learn. So you can take a walk. It's like when you process, if you've done photographs in a dark room, there's the developer. And then there is a fixing chemical. And it's because it stabilizes the image. Well, that's just like what happens when you are taking a break after you've done new learning to stabilize that new connection. So too short a break time or not enough breaks can cause problems. You get tired and we start mixing up information. And during sleep, one of the things that happens in our brain is incomplete or weak connections are cleaned up. So like little vacuum cleaners, glial cells go through and clean things up. So offering those breaks, talking about something else, is important. And doing stretching even, or breathing for a minute or two gets blood flowing, gives the brain a break. You're not putting in new information. And if you, whatever you study right before you go to sleep, the brain, because it has that break, it's continuing to process, making those new connections stronger without competing stimuli coming in. One of my favorite seminars that I facilitate is called Magnificent Memory, Maintain It or Regain It. And what I enjoy about this seminar is helping people understand that by having some strategies and being conscious around how information is put in to the brain, that input step can make a huge difference when it's time to recall that information or get it back out again. Because often when we can't remember things, it's because we're very careless about how they went in, as opposed to very consciously choosing to remember and choosing strategies to remember. And so whether it's using chunking of information to put it into bits, to smaller pieces, or last week, as I shared, I had the opportunity to facilitate the core intention alignment for the Body and Soul Wellness Center's spas in Dubuque. And one of the pieces that I integrated into that training were 10 body actions that would help people remember each of the 10 intentions. And each one was connected to a different finger on the two hands. So not only did they have a connection triggered by a particular finger, it also had a motion in their body as well as a short phrase that went with it. Now, some people would say, well, that's just more work to make things easier to remember. Well, it might feel like that at the beginning, but you know what? To review it within 24 hours, to then go through it the next day, and to spread out that repetition, then when it's time to actually apply it, to use it, or to remember it on an exam in the case of a student or a child, that information that may not have natural connectedness to survival, now the brain has a reason to remember. Because you see, the brain's default is delete. We have so much minutia and trivia that we want our brains to remember, and our brains are focused on helping us survive. You know, if the brain will focus on, can I eat it? Can it eat me? Can I have sex with it? Can I procreate? Those are three strong attentional drivers for the brain. It's important to know what you can eat and what will kill you. That's important to remember. It's important to know what animals are friendly and what's about to have you for lunch. Brain gets that focused attention when you're not sure. And then in order for the species to survive, we definitely have attention triggers around mating, having sex, procreation. Things outside of those survival areas of the brain, and do we really need to know it? The whole numbers issue. We have so many numbers and passwords and codes. It's not natural for the brain. There's no inherent meaning into remembering that. And so it's important that we provide artificial meaning where there may not be natural meaning for the brain. And so that's an exciting session as well. What do you do when you need to consciously remember? Some people will say, don't forget, don't forget, don't forget. And oh, lo and behold, guess what? They forgot. Why? Because as my regular listeners know, and for those of you who are new, there's something called the power of the pink elephant. Do not, under any circumstances, even for a split second, think about a pink elephant. Do not visualize big pink floppy ears. Do not see big pink feet. And do not see that big, long pink trunk. Most of us are unsuccessful at not seeing the pink elephant, even if it's now purple. For a split second, it was indeed pink. And if it is now a hippopotamus or a kangaroo, it may have started as that elephant. Because in order for our brains not to do something, it first has to see what we said the not to. It has challenges with negations. How do you see yourself not sitting? Well, first you saw yourself sitting, and then you're standing, flying, floating, something, swimming. Most of us are visual processors. We think in images. And especially with kids, when we tell a child, do not touch, do not run, well, what the brain hears is do touch, do run. And so it's very confusing when all of a sudden they're in trouble and they're like, what? Remember, they're in the moment. So more effective to use language around telling what the behaviors you want. Only look. Only walk. And I find myself even now with my 10-year-old, when I'm frustrated, I will say things that reinforce the negative, that put the negative picture in his head. And I have to pause and reword it, because what do I want him to do? I want responsibility with homework. So how we choose our language makes a difference in the outcome that we see, in the message, the image that we put in, which is connected to the reticular activating system, which is like radar, what it allows that radar to come to our awareness. And when we understand that, how we speak, how we look to put things into memory, and to find out what works best for your child and for your brain, because while you may like to see how things work together, drawing pictures for story problems in math, for example, for the child, the pictures are not as effective as if you've got, you can grab some Lego blocks, you can grab some Star Wars figurines, you can even grab things like dice and game pieces and have them create the interaction with those physical objects they can move and manipulate. Because those tactile learners like to touch things, and it helps them remember and understand relationships when they can move objects in physical space. Part of that's also developmental. When they need things that are concrete, they think things they can see and move and touch. And as they get older, they can move into processing things that are abstract, where they don't have to have that. Even with algebra, using math tiles. When I worked with the Upper Bound program at Osa College, and I remember as we were teaching the staff, college students and educators, how to best support learning in what was called AS squared G, Academic Skills and Strategies groups that met for 3 hours every morning working on the basic core subjects on an individual contract system, so that the high school students had an opportunity to develop, to catch up if they were behind or to move ahead, and to get some individualized instruction that worked in harmony with how they learned. And one of the tools was to help the staff understand how to use math tiles, a way to make things like algebra concrete. And one of the staff members, as they were working with the tiles and how to do formulas like x squared plus y equals 3 or whatever, problems to solve them, huge light bulb went off for her. And she said, oh, my gosh, for the first time in my life, I understand algebra. Because she needed that concrete visual relationship for her to understand. And the good news is there are multiple strategies and multiple ways to help learning, to make up stories, help you remember. You know, that if you're talking about President Garfield, what do you see in your head? Do you need to see Garfield's face? And Michelle, you could use Garfield the cat dressed in a particular suit, uniform, whatever it might be, to make it fun, make it memorable, laughing while you're creating it. Talking about memory strategies and mnemonics can help with memory as well. And the good news is those are all solutions. When my son was younger, and even now when we're running into some challenging spelling words, although mostly he does those on his own, but when we were younger, we used to put it in his body. Because as I learned from Eric Jensen when I went through my certification to become a certified brain-based trainer, he used a lot of rhyme in helping us to remember key principles and images and phrases. One of them is, when you know it in your body, you know it. Body memory is extremely powerful. And so once it's in your body, often you can move into autopilot. You don't think about it anymore. So we put things in our body. And Jean Blades Madigan with Action-Based Research is amazingly creative at how to put content into body movement, which allows reinforcement, allows physical movement, which is healthy. Yay, Jean. She's also a certified brain-based trainer and a wonderful colleague of mine, and I'm hoping to share her with you as well. And as we were working with my son to help him spell words where they maybe didn't sound quite the same as they were spelled, we connected body parts to letters of the alphabet. So if it was an I, he touched his eye. If it was an E, he touched his ear. His nose was an N. His chin was a C. His ankle was an A. His leg was an L. His uvula was a U. That was always a fun one. So when we were spelling words, he would actually, as he spelled, close his eyes and move his body as he was saying the letters. Sometimes just seeing the letters in his imagination was enough. Sometimes it was that we needed to do it in the body and practice in the body. Find out what seems to work with your child or with yourself. You know, when I need to remember something, I'm between two places, I don't have any paper, I put things in my fingers on my body, hang them mentally in different places in my body. So in this hand, in my right hand, I put down that I needed to ask a question about an upcoming project. And what was that question? In my left hand was, information that I needed to give to someone else. I needed to remember to print a report. There are all sorts of ways that you can improve your memory. If you Google mnemonics, M-N-E-M-O-N-I-C-S, you'll find wonderful strategies on making up sentences, on rhyming and music, and all of those are part of my seminar, Magnificent Memory, Retain It or Regain It. And another thing that's very important around learning and memory is the nutrition. What are you feeding your brain? What are you fueling it with? And are you fueling it with giving it enough water and oxygen and blood flow? And exercise is awesome. Moving is a great strategy for the brain and learning. So taking care of your brain like it's yours for life, like you'll be together for life, so powerful, because everything, ladies and gentlemen, everything in our lives, everything about us is connected to our brain. So in the next week ahead, take an action on something you heard. Learn something about your brain, because while there are some commonalities about brains, like brains are social, they're designed to connect, brains are also unique in the combinations of some of the ways they process it. We can learn about that, which can increase your effectiveness in how you do such a variety of tasks, including achieving goals, including joy in your life, including organization. So in the week ahead, I invite you to play with your memory. It's okay to write things down, or for many of us who put it in our smartphones now, or on our tablets. But practice with your memory. It's great to keep your memory growing. Try a new memory strategy this week, with yourself, with your kids, a new way to remember something that is important. Try putting it in your body and see what happens. Now, one other thing that Tony Bazan's research, or that's research that he cited in his book, Make the Most of Your Mind, is that spaced repetition is powerful for memory. Review information and take that break and review it again within the same learning period, again within 24 hours, again within 7 days, again within a month. So in school, many of us had pop quizzes the next day. We had a chapter test in a week. We had a unit test in a month. So we were spacing out our review, our repetition. So thank you to those of you who are regular listeners. You got a refresher from some pieces to boost your brain strategies. A few new tips maybe about gender and the brain. Have some fun with your memory this week. Play with the process. and truly take care of your brain like it's yours for life. Thanks for being here. Stay tuned for the exciting guests we're going to bring you away. Until next time, I hope that you have your best brain at work, school, and home. And I invite you to visit brainbonanza.com to learn more, discover more resources for how I can support you. That's BRAINBONANZA.com. Till next time, stay safe.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Miss Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.